Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
It believes everything is political, and all our problems are due to a lack of education. We look into the arts, finance, and humanities to learn the solutions. The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio comes to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and the arts in a way that encourages all to think for themselves so the best possible political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, The Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity and political unity. So it's no surprise that today our guest is with us today is Mecca. And oh, Mecca, I've forgotten your last name. I'm sorry, Mecca. What's your last name? Mecca Burns.
Burns. Oh, you don't have a verb for that sentence.
That's right, Mecca Burns. How challenging a name to forget. Gee, Mecca Burns. Great name. Great name. Now, let's not to rush you, but I know you're doing big things in Charlottesville, Virginia, but you've been all over. So before we talk about Charlottesville, give us some idea of your international travels and intrigue.
Okay, well, it's really the same work wherever it takes shape in the world, using participatory theater to address social issues. And most currently, the main place that I've been working is in East Africa with several organizations in Uganda and Kenya, where I'm headed back there at the beginning of February to do a year-long project where it's training leadership development for people in villages to be able to train each other and continue this work of, which I will talk more about, how theater can be used for social change.
Sure. Wonderful. So the Presence Theater's mission is what exactly?
Well, it's a lot about bringing the personal and the political together, a little bit like your intro there, Marcello.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about how both the inner healing that needs to happen in order for the outer healing to happen in social institutions.
Using the
media of the arts, of especially drama with music, and we also incorporate film a lot and poetry.
Visual arts, poetry, yes. Is it too trivializing to say it's therapy theater?
It's not trivializing. It's actually sort of the opposite of trivializing. It's adding more, going into territory that is sometimes a little off limits in working with communities, because for one thing, there's a stigma about therapy, and also there are certain. I am a therapist, a trauma therapist in my background. I train drama therapists to receive their credentials with a national association. So you have to be really careful about terminology. And I would say you can use it as an adjective, speaking of parts of speech. But it is clearly not therapy, but it's definitely healing and therapeutic on personal and societal levels.
Excellent. And as you say, through your work, it is certainly an international effort as well.
Yes, and it's really about joining communities in different areas. I just got off the phone with a woman from here who's headed to Uganda, Bev Wan, who's going to be hopefully visiting the village, and she does a lot of work with the USAID, and her love is with conscious dance, so she's wanting to bring some of those efforts into these villages.
Wow, fantastic. So moving on to Charlottesville specifically, the Presence Theater is involved with a theater we call, well, the Bridge isn't just a theater. The Bridge is a community of artists collecting there and doing wonderful things. But you are working at the Bridge. Well, tell us about that and where it's located and what you're doing.
Yeah, the Bridge is right near Spudnuts, right across the parking lot from Spudnuts behind the amphitheater there downtown Charlottesville. And the Bridge is a progressive arts initiative, and it does a lot of reach out to the community. They do performances there as well as art exhibits and other events. And we've been had an arrangement with them through Verbs and Vibes, which is the organization that that I've been involved with, but not a leader in. But some of the people in Presence also two of the members of Present started Verbs and Vibes Open Mic, where they incorporate poetry and music. And this is, let me say a little bit about Verbs and Vibes, if that's okay.
Oh, sure, of course.
And I'm not sure when this is going to air, Marcello, but there is an open mic tomorrow evening, Thursday.
Yes, uh-huh.
Whatever the date is, and it's, so if you want to check it out, if you haven't been there. But the Verbs and Vibes has been around for several years. It was the brainchild, the soul child of Anthony Amos, who's very well known in Charlottesville, and Kamisha Jones. And they have just moved to Washington, D.C. area for a wonderful opportunity Kamisha has. But the Verbs and Vibes will be continuing in the wonderful hands of the Saxon family. And so it's every other Thursday. And what I want to mention about it is that this is a unique place in all of Charlottesville because, I first re-met Anthony through the Dialogue on Race, where we were noticing, we were bemoaning the lack of opportunities for entertainment, just for African Americans who come to Charlottesville maybe to look into jobs or interview at the university and aren't attracted to it, partly because they don't feel culturally there's much to offer here.
Mm-hmm.
And Verbs and Vibes is about the only place I've seen where consistently people not only of all races, but of all ages, of different religions and political persuasions even, and also artistic disciplines come together and in this atmosphere of such warmth and comfort and love that people are able to bring out their dearest moments in terms of the poetry they're writing,
mm-hmm.
and the music they're creating. And so it's a very welcoming spot for people to come, whoever you are and whatever mood you're in, and you know, whatever you want to kind of try out and get some feedback on.
And this is an ongoing thing at the Bridge?
Absolutely. I mean, Verbs and Vibes hopefully will continue into infinity because it's, I think the key is the continuity of it.
And so just so we're clear, you are saying verbs as in as a part of speech, verbs and vibes.
That's kind of a theme of this conversation, parts of speech.
Yes, it is. Well, that's excellent because I'm taking from that it's the word and the music as well. So it's poetry,
yes.
It's all the arts you've been speaking of, poetry and visual arts, drama and dance, I presume, yes?
Yeah, that's not, we could use more people who would like to share, you know, with movement there. But it's very open, and I think I've made that pretty clear.
Yes, excellent. Well,
open mic.
Exactly, and open mic. And at open mic, anyone is free to get up and present their art, their talent.
You come at around 7 or so, and there's a little sign-up list. I mean, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of hip-hop artists come and spoken word, and there's singer-songwriters who come. We had a didgeridoo player once who suddenly appeared on stage, and then other instruments joined him one by one, and then suddenly there was a line of rappers who were just waiting to get in there to join that beat, and it was heavenly, and everyone else in the audience was filming it just because this was such an unforgettable moment of different genres
coming together. Yeah, and the spontaneity of it, and the energy that it must produce is contagious.
The atmosphere, you know, the sense of friendliness and warmth and freedom. Freedom of expression.
Now, I know you have a special event coming up on Monday, but let me ask, with Verbs and Vibes, is this a sort of regular once a week, once a month gathering at the Bridge? How does that work?
It's every other Thursday,
okay.
Typically, including this Thursday, as I mentioned, the 16th.
Okay, we will air on Friday the 17th, but I have other ways of putting the word out for Thursday,
right.
And I will do that.
And like I say, it's okay if you miss it, because there will be another one and another one. And also, if you miss it on Thursday, you can come on Monday, which we're going to start talking about now.
Yes. So we know, I guess, most of us, the significance of Monday, January 20th, but why don't you enlighten us?
Yeah, I'm actually just about to go and meet with Bernard Hankins to do a program with children at a special ed school, middle school kids, that where we apply theater to sometimes to conflict issues and just interpersonal growth with the kids and bringing in Martin Luther King, who, you know, he has a holiday. And
yes.
This is such a momentous thing, even though the kids don't have school on Monday, but they know that there's a reason why they're on vacation at least, and he's one of unfortunately the only iconic figures from the civil rights movement that everyone knows about, but certainly if you had to choose one, a paramount figure. And one of the things we're moving into this year with our event is, rather than seeing King, you know, people think of black and white and integrating, you know, desegregation and tolerance and love between races and the, you know, the black children, white children joining hands and all of those phrases. There's other ways that people disengage from each other and have, there's a lot of turf issues in Charlottesville, everywhere, even amongst artists. And so one of the things that we want to do this year is look at how artists can support each other more across different media. And some of us, frankly, love all of the arts, many of us. I think you're one of those.
Yes, yes.
And it's really hard to choose. I mean, I've chose drama because, and if there's time, I'll explain why I find it paramount for me, means to bring about social and personal transformation. But when, you know, you don't want to block other people from being able to join together and be creative in tandem with each other. So we've recently started another organization called The Source, the Expressive Arts Initiative, and this is myself and three other women and more people hopefully allying with us. And this is using visual arts, especially collage and other forms of artistic expression that everyone can do. And so what's going to happen on Martin Luther King Day at the Bridge is very appropriate, you know, the bridge, the place to bridge things, and Martin Luther King Day, who is the supreme bridger.
Yes.
At 5 o'clock, the Expressive Arts Initiative, The Source, will be providing materials in an atmosphere where people can create artistically together. And then as we move into the evening at around 7, we'll change the shape of the space to become more of a performance venue with, you know, an audience set up and a PA and microphones and so forth. During the late afternoon, early evening, the artistic products that are created then, whether it's poetry or a collage or maybe a group piece with a mural, can then be shared during the evening, and someone might, you know, write a poem that they would recite or be working on a song. So it's really a chance for people to just very, very informally join together and get respecting each other, you know, each other's requirements for light and for quiet and all those, you know, the ways that different arts have different needs.
And this is, I'm just trying to make certain I'm clear. Verbs and Vibes and the Presence Theater are two separate things, but they sort of overlap occasionally at the Bridge, and are and each is working to give everyone an equal voice. Would that be?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, Presence's main focus is drama and theater, which incorporates all of the other arts as well.
Yes.
And Verbs and Vibes' main focus is poetry and music and providing the Anthony Amos is a DJ,
yes.
Conscious hip hop DJ, and his focus is really on creating an atmosphere where people thrive and where he will bring someone to the stage in a way where they already feel like they're home. And they have a chance to really offer what's deepest in their soul, and in a way that people can really receive it.
And when you take this form of expression through the arts to other countries, do you get a similar response as you do here?
Well, it's actually a lot. Once I can get there, it's even more well received, because. Mm-hmm. Especially in Africa, there's so much of the context for music, dance, and drama over there, and using oral forms of communication. And I think also when you've bothered to come that far, people just welcome you so deeply and provide, you know, excellent hospitality and food, and then are really, you know, there's a lot of, it's always dealing with issues in villages, and there's barriers, and you know, family emergencies, and but it's like you're really entering into their lives,
mm-hmm.
and all that becomes, you know, grist for the mill as far as the theater work, bringing in people's real life issues that are happening right there in the moment.
And I understand in many other cultures other than America, I mean, that the music, theater, dance are sort of one thing. They don't think of it as separate disciplines, but one thing. Has that been your experience?
Yes, that's what we were talking about the other day. MDD, I know at least at the universities in East Africa, like Makerere University, that's the department, is called Music, Dance, Drama.
I love that. I know I've shared a couple of conversations with you about that point in my experience, even in graduate school.
Right.
I was there getting an MFA in directing, but I had a Bachelor of Music from Peabody as a singer. And
I think you're saying that they were right down the hall.
Yes.
The departments are right close by, but there's like, you showed up and they all looked shocked.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Well, that was in New York in graduate school.
Okay,
I was in D.C., but it was the same kind of thing. Now, I don't want to mention the schools, just because I'm sure we're not the only. Well, I know just from talking to you, we're not the only ones who have experienced this. But in D.C. in graduate school, I got a Master of Fine Arts in directing, and when the musicals came along. I could sing, yes, but the directors who were directing the musical wanted me to sing, and I was all for that. I thought that was great, but the gentleman in charge of the MFA directing program said, no, I had to be a stage manager, and which was, you know, part of my education, but I could have stage managed a straight play, you know, and also because I had a degree in opera, I knew the singers in the even though I hadn't gone to school there, I knew the singers in the university and could go get them. I said, you know, why don't we get them to come audition and we'll have sort of an interdepartmental thing. Well, you would have thought I had suggested blowing up the place, but I did.
I know there's really viable reasons for boundaries between disciplines. That's so important for each one to keep its purity and its integrity and its own history. However, let's explore those boundaries and how we can recognize them. It's like keeping the diversity there, but also
yes.
unifying, letting the diversity really shine so that we can unify more. And in the sense of, for example, if someone's drawing or making a collage and they have a little piece of poetry that they want to put in the collage, or maybe their painting inspires someone else to write a poem, and meanwhile there's somebody who's creating music who's just, you know, improvising on a guitar that's kind of furnishing, again, that atmosphere where the arts can merge and mingle.
Well, I think that's the point. It's such a I respect the different disciplines.
Yeah.
And I certainly work in them independently, but I like to see. Well, I'm used to, of course, because my career started in opera, and that's where they all come together, and not even
right.
Not even just the disciplines that we're discussing today, but costume and staging and, you know, props and everything. I'm glad that there are at least two of us on this earth that think we can respect and at the same time cooperate and do things. Okay, let's take a short break. I'm going to be right back, everyone. This is Marcello Rolando. My guest is Mecca Burns of the Presence Theater, and she's planning a cooperating with Verbs and Vibes in Charlottesville, but she goes around the world, actually, with Presence Theater and involves and connects people and cultures through the arts. It's really fascinating. We're going to take a short break. I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, and we're going to hear from a man we've been mentioning, creative catalyst and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Hey, yo, I'm a Christian. But I'm bringing peace like the word for Islam. I'm bringing peace like the peace de resistance. Like covalent, I bond words, but my word is bond. I'm bringing peace like shalom. That's Jewish like David the gnome who wears a hat that's shaped like a cone. I'm bringing peace like Catholics in their services. Peace be unto you and also unto you from the pews. I'm bringing peace out like hip-hop DJs on ones and twos who run with crews, but these kind got peace signs and not gang signs and don't end up on the news. I speak my mind with peace signs over top of beats and rhymes. Speaking now or forever holding my peace so I can have peace of mind. Speaking my peace, giving you a piece of my mind. I'm bringing peace like Reese's, peace like the Prince of Peace is Jesus. You know, seek and you'll find. I got the rhyme, the truth, and the lyrics. I'm bringing peace like one of the nine fruits of the spirit. I'm bringing peace that passes all knowledge and understanding of even your college campus. I'm bringing peace like peace and love, man, like doves and olive branches. I'm bringing peace like there's a time for war, a time for peace, ecclesiastical. I'm bringing peace like you need to take it easy on a sabbatical. I'm bringing peace like the opposite of violence is, like a violinist needs to practice a piece that's classical.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Mecca Burns of Presence Theater. Let's talk specifically about what you're doing with the theater, creative nonviolence, etc.
Yes, I would love to. And I want to say it's the full name, kind of long, is Presence Center for Applied Theater Arts, partly because we don't really have a theater. In fact, there's a, you know, we more work in the field. We'll go to different places so that in the traditional theater, often it's mostly theater goers who go to the theater, and which is wonderful. And it's so important to have that medium, you know, of theater that's this ancient artistic method of bringing people together and kind of integrating all of the arts and performance. So we're very grateful for that, but we don't really do that much of that. In fact, most of the work we do is non-scripted. We have a narrative, but the people who are engaged in it do not need to memorize lines or perform. Often there's performance involved, but it's very interactive with the audience. And now you asked me a specific question, though, Marcello.
Just to tell us more about, talk about Leslie's play, for instance.
Yes, let me go into that, because my husband, Brad Stoller, is the producer of the theater at Piedmont, Virginia Community College, and they're having a very special event next week that is a play written by a local playwright, her name is Leslie Basfield, and she has written a play called I Shall Not Be Moved, which is based on the Montgomery bus boycott. So it's being presented as part of the community-wide Martin Luther King Day celebration, which, by the way, if you want to see what else is going on, look up, you can just Google UVA MLK. That's what I do.
Okay.
My tip. And you will see the whole panoply of community events that are happening. It's not just a day anymore, people. It's like goes on for at least 2 weeks here in Charlottesville, which is really cool. So Leslie's play is going to be performed January 28th and 29th at 7:30 at the main stage at PVCC in the Dickinson Building. And what I wanted to mention is that some of the cast of the play has agreed to come to our event on Martin Luther King Day on Monday to share some of the scenes and monologues from the play, which I think will just add a whole other dimension of this creative nonviolence, both because of the theme of the play is about King's principles of nonviolence and how they, and the practices as they played out in Montgomery in the 1950s. But it's also bringing in another medium of theater, which we otherwise won't be having this year.
This sounds good. Your husband Brad, how long has he been at PVCC?
It was just his second year there.
Ah, okay. That's good. And so he's jumping right into this kind of programming. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier in our last segment about a racial conversation. I know as a news reporter I've been talking about that with, among other people, the city manager, Maurice Jones. But how is this racial conversation, and for that matter, how is what Presence Theater contributing? I know it is, but let's talk about how it contributes to the racial conversation. And frankly, what's the goal of a racial conversation?
Yeah, the dialogue on race. Now, that started around 2000 and, about 5 years ago.
Yes.
Now that we first got wind that this was forming. And so some of us in our troop went to some of the meetings to help bring it about,
uh-huh.
Make it happen, and contribute a little bit to letting people know that there was interest. And
by meetings, you mean city council?
Yeah,
yes.
So city council and other organizational meetings.
Yes.
So, but mostly, you know, our work is not on that level, but as much as the doing the theater activities. And we had been already doing that since 2003. We did theater pieces on Vinegar Hill and on school desegregation. We did something at Jefferson School before it went through its transformation.
Yes.
For the alumni from the Jefferson High School, they have a very, very strong alumni group.
Yes.
From elders, and that was called the Living Classroom, and it was showing how what school was like in the days before desegregation, and the strengths that existed there, and how much we lost, even with the necessity of going with the Supreme Court decision to desegregate schools, and yet a lot of people don't realize how many teachers lost their jobs or were demoted, and schools that were closed,
yeah.
Because, of course, the black children had to go to the white schools, the white children wouldn't go to the black schools. So just, you know, with the even best of intentions sometimes, that there's unexpected turns of events.
Yes.
And so there's been a real loss in Charlottesville that's never been recovered, and with as well as with the Vinegar Hill neighborhood. And then, so looking at the history, especially the 20th century history, but also how it's reflected in the current situation and
mm-hmm.
some of the social ills that have still not healed.
Mm-hmm.
And many organizations like we've been involved in the very supported by UCARE, which is University Community Action for Racial Equity, as well as other local organizations like Bama Works and the Community Fund and Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. So what we began to do in 2003 was to create theater pieces showing, they're fictionalized, you know,
mm-hmm.
that have a protagonist that you identify with who's and families, and then seeing different families and how they're affected. And then afterwards, we would often engage the audience more interactively with playback theater or forum theater.
Mm-hmm.
We would do a lot of workshops. And then when the dialogue on race started, we'd already been doing this work. And then we had a forum to continue. And some of our current members were ones that joined in the middle of the beginning, in the inception of the dialogue on race process. Because we had told the city that we would really like to help, you know, apply theater to what you're doing with the dialogue on race.
And how did the city respond to that?
Well, we did several events. We worked with several of these. You know, for us, it was like a gold mine of new. You know, there was a lot of things that were happening in the state at that point. We
uh-huh.
had a brief moment where we had a. April became national, or April became the month celebrating the Confederacy, and then it was retracted. But during that time, we developed a whole theater piece about that.
Wow.
We had one called Shopping While Black, which is about racial profiling in stores.
Yes.
And also about working on the dialogue on race itself and how difficult it can be to work across racial lines. That, for example, someone like me who's white is often, you know, seems suspicious. Like, why are you involved? What's your agenda? You know, what's your... And that's part of what, you know, I talk about the inner work of outer change, of, like, really trying to suss out what is, you know, what is it? What is your desire? Like, what is your longing that you're doing this work to fulfill? And where does that come from in your personal history?
Tell me, recently in Charlottesville, on grounds of the University of Virginia, there was a sign at the health center. Someone wrote graffiti that UVA hates blacks, I believe it said. And that, of course, prompted a great deal of news reporting, which in which I was involved. But I'm wondering... that it's not that that kind of thing is rare, and we certainly know. I mean, it's rare comparatively, but it does keep raising its head. What are your thoughts when you heard about that?
Well, I feel very proud of being affiliated with this organization, UCARE, whose central mission. It's a university-based organization, but it really interacts with the community, and in a beautiful way, where it draws a lot of input from different churches and all kinds of community leaders and just regular people who care about race relations in Charlottesville. So, I'm not as involved with the university as some people, so I'm probably not as the best. But maybe someone from UCARE would be great to have on your show.
Yes, that's a very good idea. I've interviewed them for news, but never on the on either of the talk radio shows. Okay, let's get back to your activity in Martin Luther King Day this coming Monday, January 20th, at the Bridge. Is there any more specifics we'd like to get into as to what people can expect and how they can participate?
Well, I feel a little sheepish right now suddenly because we're not doing, presence isn't really doing that much with drama, partly because two of our key troop members have moved away. And so that ushers in this whole other possibility of bringing in the visual arts in the late afternoon and then going into the open mic and then having, Leslie's play, I Shall Not Be Moved, scenes from that also woven into the evening. But what I would like to just say a little bit about how we continue to use drama, whether we're performing as a whole troupe or whether just a couple of us or one of us is leading a workshop or some kind of experience like that. Like as I mentioned, Bernard and I going right after the phone call, I'm going to drive up to Ivy Creek School to do work with middle school children with him using drama with King's Principles of Nonviolence. And, for me, doing the social change work is so much part of my family history. My brother's a civil rights activist and a scholar of Martin Luther King. My father's a political scientist. My mother is very involved in political and therapeutic modalities. And yet I need to bring the arts in for myself to find the meaning and the deeper, the way that the arts enliven the whole process on a soul level and bringing in the whole body and all the pleasure and the laughter and tears of really engaging fully with your emotions through the body. So for me, it's hard to imagine. I mean, I would still do it without it, but I wouldn't be having as much, satisfaction, I would say, when I'm in a room just meeting and talking, and I really value it. Sometimes that's just what you need to do, sometimes for many hours, and yet I'm always thinking in the back of my mind how we can play this scene out through theater. Now, the word theater, let's talk about that, Marcello.
Sure.
This word is so, I'm realizing more and more, I've loved drama. Even when I was a shy little kid, I just loved doing acting out plays and stuff in our neighborhood, and that was a place I felt very some other part of me emerged that I was normally just so didn't ever talk to anybody, but I could when we were doing when I was in a role.
Sure.
So I realized that to other people, I sometimes see the reactions when I use the word theater, or maybe I'm imagining it, but I'm beginning to realize how people associated so much with pretense and illusion and disguise, and then there's also this other dimension of potentially feeling exposed, and that you're up on the stage and you're going to forget your lines. Maybe you're in a school play or church pageant and just the angst and everyone's looking at you, and maybe you'll even, you're up higher and also there's all this production that has to happen and rehearsal. And so it's tricky. It's a challenge to convey what we do that's so different from that. And even with all due respect to that whole world, which I love, that we're out like under a mango tree in a village, for example, or maybe we're in a parking lot in Charlottesville, and we're able to bring the essence of theater and drama is still alive wherever you are.
Yes.
And this element of, I'm thinking, what is theater really? And it's how is it different from, you've got a plot, you've got characters. Well, a story, fiction has that, books have that, but it's bringing elements of movement and the voice, which, like dance and music have, and then it's also got a visual element with, the scene and the backdrop and the whole setting.
Mm-hmm.
So, whether we're of it being associated with pretense, which was pointed out to me by a cab driver in Nairobi last summer, and I just was like appalled to suddenly realize this, because we were looking at this, I think I told you this, this billboard, and it said, no more drama. And I had just been talking with him about this very issue of how people associate drama with too much emotional turmoil, you know, too much freaking out, and everybody's too much stress, and you know, we don't need any more drama around here. And I say, well, we need to learn to engage, to work with the drama, because it's going to be there, you know. So let's do drama therapy to practice that.
And but as
the cab driver said,
go ahead. Sorry, you go ahead.
Well, the cab driver said, no, no, they don't mean that kind of drama, like emotional angst and turmoil. They mean like pretense and people. It was a, it was an election ad for, you know, it was a campaign ad. They're talking about pretense and somebody's not real, and they're, you know, they're trying to trick you into thinking there's something they're not. And I realized, oh my God, this is what people think of with theater, that it's all about, you know, like I said, illusion and disguise, and things aren't really what they seem. And no wonder it's unsettling.
Well,
and my experience with drama therapy and participatory theater is that you can often reach the deepest truths of all when you step into another role and you can see yourself from another perspective, and you can, you know, you can really tell your story in a way that it isn't about acting. You're acting, but you're more bringing out something that you previously, maybe you didn't have a way to share it. You know, often it's through metaphor, even if it's not a realistic scene.
Mm-hmm.
It can be presented metaphorically in a way that makes, you know, it may not be the real image, but it's the true image.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you're longing to express that finally it resonates with people in a new way.
And I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's something when drama, theater, is at its best, even without the settings, as you say, of a building or even a set. When theater does that for the actor, what you're describing, that you get to see an entire different multi-level POV, and then the actor in turn gives that experience to the audience, it's a visual that is very powerful. And again, as you alluded to earlier, when you fictionalize, you take hot issues, whether they be about racial, sexual abuse, or lack of education, or prejudice, whatever, we can take the hot issues of life, and by fictionalizing them in a theatrical performance, people, whether they're sitting in a on the meadow under an oak tree, or in the Kennedy Center in the dark, can be moved, because they're caught up in the story and the characters and the relationships and the moment, the emotions, that they, it's at best when they don't realize until perhaps after, on the ride home or over a cup of coffee later, they, oh my God, you know, that was...
Yeah, and there's a term for that. Well, one thing it's called is aesthetic distance.
Yes.
So you have a little bit of loosening of, rather than being too overwhelming in drama therapy, sometimes, you know, you can modulate the aesthetic distance so that if something's too hot, someone's just going to close down. They can't access it. It's,
exactly.
But if it's too remote, you know, then it's too cold and too... they don't care enough. So how to get to modulate that so that they're engaged, but they don't, for example, you know, something, it's about another, it maybe it's your life, but
mm-hmm.
it's presented in the third person, so you're talking about your own story in the third person, fictionalizing it.
And
the other thing about drama, as far as, in addition to being able to change your character, like you were saying, to take on another's point of view and see yourself from a different perspective, which
yes.
is amazing.
Yes.
To get to have a genre where that's mostly what you do. That's mostly what drama is,
mm-hmm.
taking on a different role. I mean, that's one of the primary elements of it. And you can also go to any setting, any environment. You can experience through your imagination what it's like to be in a different environment. But what I love even more is being able to move in time. And what I find really useful with this, the kind of work that we do in communities, is you can For one thing, you can try out strategies for the future. You know, what would happen if I did this?
Mm.
And then the other person in the scene responds, and you can do it in a sort of a laboratory setting where you don't, there's not like too many real life consequences played out, how someone would react. And again, you need to, this is beyond basic role playing, because you really need to be able to go deeply into how the character would respond, and so there's some technique involved with that. But even just role playing is really useful for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so, you know, actually, for people, when we do forum theater, which was developed by Augusto Boal in Brazil, this is like the main work that I love to do. People in the audience actually step in and they try out a solution. They can call stop in the middle of the scene. In fact, they're supposed to do that, and then they step in and take the place of usually the main character, and they try something different.
Mm.
And the other actors are prepared to, you know, give them the challenge, but also, you know, maybe they'll convince the other actors of this, of a fresh approach. So that's how the audience gets activated. They become activated spectators.
Fantastic.
Otherwise known as spect actors.
Fantastic. I'm afraid we've sort of run out of time, but before we go, please, again, let us know. It's Monday the 20th.
That's right.
What time are we starting?
Well, if you want to get there for the visual art making part, it's at 5 o'clock, or if you just want to come and hang out and, you know, just be part of it. And it's $5 is a suggested donation, and it's and then if you want to sign up for the open mic, come like between 7:30, something like that. And
And also let us know a website or telephone number or both for Presence Center for Applied Theater Arts.
Okay, you can go to www.presencecenter, and that's like PresenceCenter. So it's leaving out a couple of letters in the middle, so to get that, it's like one word, PresenceCenter.
.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
.org.
And that will tell us, it gives us a way for people to follow through on what we've been talking about today and find out even more, perhaps. Yes?
Yes, and this will also prompt me to update the website a little bit in case anybody checks it out. So thanks for that.
Well, thank you. You have been a marvelous guest, Mecca Burns, and what you do, I think, enhances theater, as well as the understanding, human understanding of each other, the different cultures, and I like celebrating the differences. Even when it comes in marriage, I often say to people, you don't want women to be men or men to be women. You want them to be what they are and what they bring from that different POV. And of course, when you extend that to the world and different cultures, we miss so much when we are not open to diversity. But we're out of time for today, but do celebrate with Verbs and Vibes. Do celebrate the life and mission of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with Presence Center for Applied Theater Arts on Monday.
Your poetry and your songs, anything you want to share, or just yourself.
Excellent. And that's Monday at the Bridge in Charlottesville. Don't go away. This is The Reasonable Voices, a Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. My guest has been Mecca Burns. We're going to take another break and hear from our creative catalyst and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins. And then we'll be right back for a discussion panel with Daniel Garner and Michelle Opperman as well. Thank you, and stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm bringing peace, because young black males want to carry a piece. Say you want a piece of me, and then rest in peace and end up buried in the streets to the delight of those wearing those white Aryan sheets. Because hip-hop's the opposite of vegetarian. It wants beef. Drive-bys, dangerous, gangs bust, heat, got more beef than Angus. Meat from Five Guys. A destructive appetite went from rapper's delight to shooting up crack pipes, shooting craps dice, shooting gat fights. They don't know how to act right. To settle things, hip-hop used to pop and lock, and it was no biggie. Nowadays, they pop Glocks, and the block is hot, and that's why we got no biggie. And Tupac shot. They want to increase the murder, so I'm going to bring the peace further. Because hip-hop is hungry for beef like it wants a cheeseburger. It wants more beef than a pepperoni, sausage, and ham pie brought out by a pizza server. plus salami and bacon. So I'm bringing peace like Islam, like assalamu alaikum. I'm bringing peace like peace, love, and hair grease, or like long-haired hippies from Woodstock. That means I'm bringing peace from hippies to hip-hop on every hood and block.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices. In the studio with me today on our Blog Talk Radio panel discussion, our technical support, creative catalyst, and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. We want to thank you for joining us today and every day that you join us, and for recommending us to your friends both on and offline. We've talked about a lot of things related to our shows and interviews and guests, but also just topics that we think are of interest to you because of what's going on in our world. And certainly one thing, a couple of shows ago, I think Bernard started out a conversation about our creation and what we're doing, how our creation, what we create in the environment and that world, that earth that is an extension of us, is very different from the creation of God. And I didn't comment in that show just because there were other things we were talking about, but since today we want to at least start off with religion, I am a religious person, as are the four of us from what I've seen and heard from the people here at the Reasonable Voices, but I don't think I've seen any of us push our religion on anyone else, or to define that religion should be something that, while it determines perhaps our thinking, our feeling, our rapport with people, our treatment of people, it is not, however, our government. It is not. It is an individual, personal government, a spiritual government, perhaps, but it is not the way we should impose our will or our laws on other people, whether they are religious or not. I guess that's enough to get something rolling. Go ahead, Bernard.
Well, religion is a fascinating word. I wish I knew the origin of it. But the thing that I've noticed most growing up is when you mention the word religion, there seems to be a very negative connotation automatically associated.
It wasn't always so, though, but go ahead.
Because I remember being in college, and a bunch of us were working on a project, and, you know, we were up all night, and we had the TV on all night, and eventually my friend got tired of watching whatever was on, so he just switched it to a guy preaching.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the roommates came out of the dorm, and he says, you guys are watching, like, religion? Like, it was just the sight of it made him, like, repulsed, and I was like, is he not allowed to watch religion? We just watched all these other shows where people were making sex jokes. You can watch sex jokes. Why can't he watch religion, you know? So to me, that's always been intriguing, and how people have to also dance around the word religion. But honestly, I think everybody is religious, and this is not just, like, being fun, you know, playing with words.
Mm-hmm.
But when I see people who wake up every day and they go to a job which they don't like, routine, they say these same things, another day, another dollar, hardly working hard, you know, there's these little mantras that are created, there's this communing around the water cooler, complaining about something. So to me, religion doesn't necessarily point to a deity, because I think everyone is religious. I think people who go to the frats, every Friday night, you go there, what do we say? You go there religiously.
Yeah.
So people, they go there, they commune over alcohol, they commune over shared values. It's just like what people do at church. They go every Sunday, and they commune over some type of alcohol, they commune over... So I don't think the word religion only applies to what we think of, you know, something transcendent. I think religion, if you look at the Industrial Revolution, that was kind of religious, the sort of routine mechanism going in, pulling a lever, putting issues.
Yeah.
There's something very much with routine, ritual, and religion that I think are all related.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I also thought, like, just thinking about the word religion and or religious, and I thought it was always interesting, like, in middle school, you know, if I would talk about my faith in God and somebody saying, are you, like, really religious? You know, that people would say, and I always just, you know, honestly, the word for me, I don't think about, you know, my walk with God is something of a, of like, you know, in the societal sense of the word religion, or, you know, the sense of kind of something that, because I think the attending regularly to me is different than knowing or wanting to know God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a different kind of thing, you know,
whereas
religion, that you do something regularly, can be even monotonous, but you still do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeking to know God is something that is enlivening, you know, it's something that changes your life for the better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something about the word religion. But I feel like it should be a subject that should be breached so that we could have some understandings there, because it is often danced around and sort of a taboo subject to bring up religion.
Well, it's very popular. There's a video recently where I can't think of the guy's name, but it was very popular, who said, you know, I love Jesus, I hate religion. Mm-hmm. It's very popular to beat up on religion. At the same time, though, it is, one does not want to scoff at thousands of years of tradition, the theological thought, workings, writings of countless church fathers, and the work of all of these different mm-hmm. people to find balance. Going to church, we see from Jesus himself in Christianity, his number one enemies seem to be the religious people of his day, while his friends were sinners. We all say that, and we all know that, mm-hmm. but really think about the extraordinary reality exactly. of that. That's very upheaving of the society. But at the same time, so we know that just going to church is not where one forms a personal mm-hmm. relationship with God, or Christ, but at the same time, when one goes completely on their own, as if they themselves, there's a way in which that then is to separate one from the community. Mm-hmm. So there's a balance between those two things, as there is in America, a balance between individual freedom and yet mm-hmm. communal responsibility. Second, I think we don't like talking about religion, because if I say Jesus is God, I'm saying the Muslims who claim that God is Allah are wrong. We do not like any conversation that would dare paint borders. Mm-hmm. They're called exclusive truth claims, mm-hmm. per se. No one likes exclusive truth claims, because then I have to accept the reality mm-hmm. that people in their very fundamental beliefs are different. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. It's much easier to talk generally mm-hmm. about religion or about organizations or getting together and things like that. I think one of the challenges of our society is being comfortable with people having different exclusive yeah. truth claims and loving people who have exclusive truth claims. Timothy Keller has a great sermon where he talks about that. You know, he says, if I say there is no God, well, that's an exclusive truth claim, because mm-hmm. then people who believe are wrong. If I say, you know, Vishnu, if I say Krishna is the incarnation of Vishnu, mm-hmm. then I'm saying that Christians are wrong. So you can't avoid that. But the question is, what is your disposition in having an exclusive truth claim? One of humility? Mm-hmm. That's what Keller says. You know, if you're a Christian and you believe you're a sinner, saved only by the blood of Christ, mm-hmm. then who are you to look at a Hindu or a Muslim mm-hmm. or what have you as if you're better mm-hmm. than them, because you're just as lost as they are? And I think one of the things that perhaps would do our country a lot of good is learning to have exclusive truth claims. Mm-hmm. Real fundamental differences in beliefs, and yet still live in humility and love toward one another.
Well, you know, I grew up in a very religious home. That is, my parents made me go to church, and gave us my brother and I little boxes. I think they were little yellow or red boxes, or both. I don't remember, of raisins, of all things. It's probably why I hate raisins today. To keep us quiet, you know. So we would, and when we got old enough to sneak out, we would sneak out after, you know, communion. So we got out a little early. Not my mom and dad, of course, but my brother and I. And yet I am Roman Catholic. I make the distinction between the Catholic Church and what it preaches, and priests being pedophiles, and God, and us. You know what I mean? You make those distinctions. I don't blame religion, and I certainly don't blame God for a lot of things. I think we use religion, some people do, to impose their beliefs. I'm not for that. I know this is, I've even told Daniel this in conversations every night when I walk the dog, because she has to go out by herself in the backyard with a 20-degree weather and below, but I when I walk her, I tip my hat to the sky every night. Not because I necessarily believe that's the only place God is, up in the on the moon or something, but because it is a gesture, as a statue of Christ is for me in a church, It is a gesture, a reminder, a place where we can focus in the same way mm-hmm. we go to visit a person or a gravesite even. Mm-hmm. It is not that I believe the person is there, mm-hmm. but that it is a good reminder. I tip my hat and I say thank you for one of the things, going back to what Bernard said, mm-hmm. in my entire adult life, I thank God all the time because I have always been allowed to the opportunities to do what I love doing. Mm-hmm. I never once had to punch a 9-to-5 clock, except when I was working my way through college and I had summer jobs and it was easy to go work for the government. I did that. But I had a question for both Michelle, since she mentioned middle school, and Bernard, because he mentioned college. I wonder when religion became a bad word, or as I wrote about a year ago in one of my blogs, when we started giving Jesus a bad name. Because I can remember, and not just when my parents, when I was young enough that they could force me to go to church, but I can remember when religion, the word, or being religious, was, you were never supposed to talk about religion or politics or what's it, or race. Never supposed to talk about religion, politics, or race. But I remember we weren't, it wasn't something to be ashamed of. And I got to tell you, I'm not ashamed of God, but I am ashamed of how some religious people treat other people. Right. And then when people know I'm religious, if they think I'm like that, so when did this happen? You say in college you heard this, you say in middle school, and I know I'm old enough to...
I don't know that, because that's interesting to me that you say that, because I just know, just every time you turn on the news or you talk with friends, that the word, when I've heard religion yes. used, it's always had yes. that negative weight to it. So I don't know. I always associate things with the overbearing nature of the scientific mind. Yeah. Like I said, there's nothing wrong with science. Science is needed. It's important. But I think what happened is science versus religion has happened. And
but I think both are responsible for creating that. Yeah. But my point is, in my lifetime, perhaps before you were born, he says, and hope. But, that wasn't the case.
Right.
Yet you've experienced that since college, and you've experienced it since middle school. That's what I'm getting at. Right. I want you to talk about it, not me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't tell you when in the big picture it happened. I'm trying to think about high school.
Yeah.
I mean, high school, you might have been made fun of just because you were like, oh, you're a little bit into being a Christian, but it wasn't like a hateful thing.
Yeah.
It was kind of repulsiveness. It was like, oh, you're Christian, ha 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 ha.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't really pinpoint, when I started to notice it.
Or, yeah.
Like, but the other thing I wanted to say was, this could probably play into it. I think it was interesting how you're saying you were forced to go to church.
Oh, I was.
That, to me, I think is one of the biggest reasons why religion has a negative connotation.
Yeah.
Because I want to write this little mini book about school, work, and church.
Mm-hmm.
Those three
yeah.
things
yeah.
are, you're taught, you have to go
do
this, and it's important, and you must be committed, and it's a rigorous process, and don't complain because it's important. And so you're instilled with that kind of routine structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've created a definition of religion in our culture where religion does not involve freedom
mm-hmm.
and creativity and
mm-hmm.
fun and playfulness. You're supposed to sit in church.
Yeah.
You're supposed to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Like this one.
And eat raisins.
And I mean, this has to do with race, too, because
yeah.
allowing other cultures and diversity to come in the picture.
Yes.
There's this comedian who talks about, he's a white guy and he married a black woman,
mm-hmm.
and he just talks about the difference between white and black church. He's like, white people, we ain't got time to be in church all Sunday. We got to get to Target. We got to watch football games. He's like, black people, y'all talking to the preacher? Like, well, you being disrespectful. He's like, you can talk to the preacher in church? He's like, it's 10 o'clock. I got to get home. It's 12 o'clock. I got to get home. It's 2 p.m. I got to get home. It's a black people. Y'all be in church till 8 o'clock. It's Monday. So just that, there is a difference between going to a black experience and a white experience. And
yeah.
I think a lot of times in white culture, there's this kind of feeling that it's irreverent to, like, talk and express and,
mm-hmm.
be outwardly speaking to God or to other people. And so then you get this picture of religion is like school and work. It's a routine.
Yeah.
You're supposed to do it, and it's a job.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like their jobs, and that's why they don't like religion.
Well, that's a good point you're making, about several good points. I There's no way. I mean, it's not like we were whipped or anything. But in those days, you didn't have a choice. You know, it was Sunday morning in a car. Well, you got up. You had breakfast. Oh, Michelle, jump in. We're running out of time.
Well, I think, just thinking about how, I don't know why this is coming to mind, but, Jesus told, those around him and his disciples to be child, to be like children, and, to really, that those would be the ones, to be entering into the kingdom of God when you are childlike. Mm-hmm. And I think children are, I love children, and I think they really epitomize that sense of imagination, of creativity, of playing, of constantly wanting to learn. And I think, honestly, church, for me, I'm thankful because I feel like God has given me an understanding of that as a daily, a daily participation, and I think to be Christ-like on a daily basis means more to, I mean, for my life is makes a bigger difference, I would want to say, than kind of like attending a meeting of some sort, Though I think there's a lot of merit in the fellowship I've had at churches, that I've been a part of. But I think that, this whole idea of like getting bored, and this is what I say, like people get bored at church and people get bored at school, people get bored with their jobs, and unfortunately people get bored in their relationships. But I think like we have to, I think that's why it's so important when you said about how, if you look at creation and you see the order and you must think, well, somebody made this, right?
Yeah.
I mean, God must, somebody,
whatever you call
us,
it, somebody.
Must be, right.
Yeah.
And it's like, God can make a world that is so vast and so diverse, thinking about even just race, people, everything, that, there is a lot of dynamicism there. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to be untaught, actually, and then be retaught. And so it's like this eternal, he's an eternal being. So like there's actually, that's a source of refueling our lives, And I don't think you'll get it anywhere else. I don't think you'll even get it in humans. So humans can be a channel for seeing God, I believe.
Terry Eagleton has this talk where he says he makes a case that the New Age atheist movement arises as a consequence of September 11th. I think a lot of religions become a much dirtier word after September 11th because we associate religion as potentially fueling fanaticism. So now it's dangerous because, it could cause these problems. Second, I think people don't like religion because they think it's repressive, sexually repressive. It keeps you from doing all the fun things you want to do. To that, I think it's very important to note, C.S. Lewis said, the one who sins is too easily pleased. To actually refrain from sinning is to open oneself up to a greater joy. The one who refrains from premarital sex opens himself up to the wholeness of marital sex, for example, or what have you. These are little ideas that aren't really taught in church. And I do not understand why. One must restore the sense of the playfulness and the joy of God. That is very, very important. I think, furthermore, I think religion is viewed as oppressing women, homosexuals, it's restricting women's rights, we see, all of these different terms. Therefore, if you believe in this, you are part of that oppression. Now, the ministry of Jesus is remarkably centered on liberating and empowering the individuals around him, Mary Magdalene, the tax collectors, which is interesting in all of the things. The fact that Christianity in particular has gotten labeled as such is strange. And I do think, though, at the same time, the conversation about Christianity cannot be reduced simply to we have the Christians who go and help the homeless, and then we have the Christians who are fundamental. I think that Jesus is combines together both what would be called progressive and conservative Christianity. But the problem is, in order to figure out how exactly that works, we have to read the Bible, and we have to really think about it. And that takes more than what we have.
Not just wave it.
That's correct. It takes a whole lot of work. When Jesus says, the least will enter first. What the heck does that mean? That isn't so simple. I think we think these one of the facts that we can just throw Bible verses at people creates these self-evident truths of what something means when you have to read it in the entire context. This isn't helped in our mediafied TV, radio, internet culture that Neil Postman warns about. The work of, say, knowing what the Bible says or knowing what Christianity is about is remarkably complex and difficult. And if we're only going to this is an example of why just going to church isn't enough, because there's a way in which church has to be integrated into one's entire life. Every day walking, every day thinking and meditating upon these things. Because it's like, okay, well, you believe in Christianity, well, why not Islam? Well, then you have to really meditate upon Islam and Hinduism.
If you think church is boring,
you're not going to do anything. That's correct.
If your mentality is, I have to go to church, you don't want that apart. That's why people constrict it to Sunday. There was like The Simpsons. There was this episode where Marge made the family go to church, and somebody made Homer said, he said, my favorite time of church is the minute right after it ends, because that's the longest point between I have to be at church again.
That's right. And did he miss church and have the best day ever?
I'm going to jump in and say, though, that because my parents made me go to church is probably laid, well, not probably, I'm definitely laid the foundation of my strong faith. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't go to church as often and I live so far away from Roman Catholic Church now, but I'm comforted by something, thanks to you three, that I'd long since forgotten, but you've reminded me. In my years in New York and television, in the busy schedule of that, Sunday became when I would take it easy. Well, I had a roommate at the time who was an attorney, and I once just mused over dinner that I was feeling a little upset that I wasn't going to church anymore, and I had never even thought about this. He says, what are you talking about? You go to church every day. Because he was aware, I didn't know this, you know, I was in a whole other wing of the apartment, but he knew I prayed every morning because I played Gregorian chant. Mm-hmm. And he, he just said that, and it made me realize what Michelle's been saying. It's every time I have a moment, and talk about studying the Bible. Recently, I revisited the Beatitudes. I got to tell you. Mm-hmm. If you just take a little time mm-hmm. and just read and think about each one of those, mm-hmm. I don't care who you are, what you believe, what religion or no religion, there is amazing power and wisdom in those words, and it's so simple. You can mm-hmm. get through them in any time, but you got to think on them. Right. You got to let them sink in. But anyway,
I think the thing that I find interesting, like I'm not Catholic, but I find a great respect for the sort of Catholic rigor.
Yeah.
Just a commitment to, like, we're going to read this thing on the page, and you're going to read it.
This is the creed, and this is what you believe. I'll say it.
There's something there about, like, commitment and learning how to, like, just be about something even when you don't fully understand it yet, and the rituals and the rites and all that. There's something very important in that everybody needs to know. You know, even if you don't believe in being religious, there's something there about commitment and the value of being committed to something. And I think that it has to be coupled, I said, like, with other experiences of the black church. It's like, these people show up and they don't know what's going to happen. They just jump into it and sing a song.
I want to say, if I can, I know we're going over, but the only time I've ever been in a black church, per se, that I can really recall, or maybe there have been other times, but this really sticks out in my mind because it was a funeral. And Roman Catholic funerals are very different. But this lady was a real estate agent, and I had taught her how to do that back in the day when I... Well, that's a whole other story. But I taught her how to... They gave it to me because I sold a lot of houses, and they said, Marcello will teach you how to do this. And I did. And one night I get a call. She had died. She was not an old person. She was, 40 maybe? And she had had cancer, and I remember her saying in the office how she was tired all the time, etc. Anyway, I went to the church, and I got the greatest experience of how one deals, or can deal, with death. A woman got up, and she read a poem she had written, and it ended with, so while we're here going, there she goes, mm-hmm. on the other side. They're all waving, here she comes. And it really was moving. And there's one other thing that you said that won't make me cry, but I want us to think about. Daniel said something about 9/11, and that's when people started to fear or whatever, think negatively about religion. I would like to point out, God bless you, dear, I'd like to point out, because it made me think of something. I was alive during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I remember as a child people lining up. I'm sure they did it at Protestant churches and synagogues as well, but I was in a Roman Catholic family, lining up around the block. They had to hold mass out on the street. So many people were coming during those 13 days in October. So I hope whatever you believe in, you find something to believe in before there is an international crisis. Okay, I'm going to call it that because Daniel would have us here talking all night. This is the reasonable voice.
The black church. We're black church here.
We're all in black church today. All right, and good for it, too. The reasonable voices in the studio with me today are technical support, creative catalyst, and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Opperman and David L. Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you so very much for joining us in this very special discussion today and every day. Please recommend us to your friends, both on and offline. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.